GTA'sı mı az?
Good evening, cultists, or morning, whenever you're listening. Welcome. We're now in month 825 of this year, and I sincerely hope you're hanging on to your sanity. I'm not so sure, but I'm here anyway. I know I'm good to you. I'm DK, your host for these things, and today we're going to be taking a look at an 80s, well, borderline science fiction classic based on a Philip K. Dick story. No, it's not that one. This episode, we're going to be pulling large objects out of our nose, taking out our frustration on taxi drivers with mining drills, and trying not to let our eyes pop literally out of our heads as we get our asses to Mars to discuss the 1990 released Schwarzenegger classic, Total Recall. And remember, 3 is the magic number. Speaking of which, as usual, I'm not alone. This time I'm being joined by a couple of guests who both made their last appearance earlier this year. Both of them wanted to be in on this one, so never let it be said I don't give people what they want. First up, you last heard him at the beginning of the year for our Escape from New York review. Not only is he a lover of movies, but he's also the one that clears up my messes, metaphorically speaking. It's the editor extraordinaire, Nick.
Hello there. And not only your messes I clear up, I'll be clearing up my own as well on this.
How are you doing today, fella?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good. Now, before we go any further, I do want to say thank you for the editing so far this year. You've made this thing seem a lot more professional, which, you know, admittedly is a low bar, but I do appreciate it all the same.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. Yeah, I'm not sure how professional I do make it look, but I do my best with very limited skills.
So groovy. Next up, we have the return of a very special guest. You last heard him, if you listened in, that is, and if not, why not, on our Night of the Comet review earlier in the year. You'll know him to be a man of impeccable taste, in other words, a nerd, like us. He's an actor, writer, comedian, and internet celebrity. It's Mr. Jason Gaston.
Greetings. I apologize for nothing.
How are things with you right now?
Oh my goodness, things could not be better if I was twins. I am just having a great time, and I'm completely, completely delusional right now. Everything's awful. Everything's terrible. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Fair enough. When we scheduled this one, this movie is one of your top choices, together with the aforementioned Night of the Comet. Is it one that holds a special place in your heart?
It's one of my favorites. It is just one of my favorite movies. It's got everything. Love Arnold Schwarzenegger. I love science fiction. There's so much to love in this movie.
Cool. Well, we will get into that shortly. But for right now, I've got to ask you both a question. We've looked at our fair share of Schwarzenegger movies on silver screen over the last couple of years, and they've always been popular with the listeners. Nick, I think our first episode together was kind of a sort of backdoor pilot for cult classics in which we discussed Predator.
Yeah, and that one really took off. I'm not sure why. There's some serious audio issues on that. But yeah, they do tend to be popular. Terminator films as well have done very well. Yeah. So let's hope for the views on this one.
So what is it about Arnie's movies and Arnie himself that you consider so endearing? And do you guys have a particular favourite from his filmography?
This is actually my favourite Arnie film. Been a fan for a long time, way back in the 80s. It was always an event when a new Arnie film was coming out, less so later on in his career. But it was always a big thing. But this is absolutely my favourite. He's a big crowd pleaser. I think that really sort of sums it up.
It's hard to pick a favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie because it's like trying to choose your favorite child. They're all just wonderful in their own ways, especially the ones in the 80s and early 90s. Definitely Total Recall is up there, but I also have a very soft spot for Commando because Commando was the first one that I ever saw in theaters, and so I'm very emotionally attached to it. Of course, the Terminator movies, and whenever I say that, I mean the first three, because Terminator 3 is a classic, and I don't care what you say, and we'll fight over it if we have to. And his comedies like Kindergarten Cop. I think what makes it, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger has just got such a charismatic personality that I think has overcome his accent and his stiffness, and I would even say his awkwardness as an actor. He's a fun guy to watch.
He can be very self-deprecating as well, which I think is kind of refreshing, especially for an 80s action hero. A lot of the time you expect them to kind of live up to the characters they portray.
Well, most assuredly, and I think that that is also something else about him that's very appealing. I think Last Action Hero is where he really leaned into making fun of himself. Arnold did not mind getting his butt kicked, and I like that. And that's another reason why I like Total Recall, is because he spends about probably a good 50% of the time just getting his ass handed to him. And I just love that he does not feel like he has to be the perfect center of attention. He can be flawed and he can't have people get the better of him whenever he needs to for the sake of the story.
Yeah. Well, as promised, we're going to take a look at this particular one, Total Recall. It's a 1990 American science fiction action film directed by Paul Verhoeven, with a screenplay by Ronald Shusett, Dan O'Bannon, and Gary Goldman, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Rachel Ticotin, Sharon Stone, Ronnie Cox, and Michael Ironside. Based on the 1966 Philip K. Dick short story, We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, Total Recall tells the story of construction worker Douglas Quaid, who receives an implanted memory of a fantastical adventure on Mars. He subsequently finds his adventure occurring in reality as agents of a shadow organization try to prevent him from recovering memories of his past as a Martian secret agent aiming to stop the tyrannical regime of dictator Vilas Cohagen. Now, Shusett bought the rights to Dick's short story in 1974 and developed a script with O'Bannon. Although considered promising, the ambitious scope kept the project in development hell at multiple studios over 16 years, seeing 40 script drafts, 7 different directors, including David Cronenberg, and multiple actors cast as Quaid. Total Recall eventually entered the early stages of filming in 1987 under the De Laurentiis Entertainment Group shortly before its bankruptcy. Schwarzenegger, who had long held an interest in the project but had been dismissed as inappropriate for the lead role, convinced Carolco Pictures to purchase the rights and develop the film with him as the star. The initial budget was reported as $30 million, but the final one ballooned, reported being somewhere between $48 and $80 million, making it one of the most expensive films made up until that point. Principal photography took place at Estudios Churubusco in Mexico over a period of 6 months, beginning in April, May of 89. It was filmed almost entirely in sequence. Cast and crew experienced numerous injuries and illnesses during filming. In the US and Canada, Total Recall was released on June the 1st, 1990, in over 2,000 theatres. It grossed $25.5 million and finished as the number one film of the weekend ahead of Back to the Future Part 3, and giving it the highest opening weekend gross of the year to date, beating Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It was also the highest opening for an R-rated film. It went on to earn approximately $261.4 million worldwide, making it the fifth highest grossing film of the year. Its critical reception was mixed, with reviewers praising its themes of identity and questioning reality, but criticizing content perceived as vulgar and violent. The practical special effects were well received, earning the film an Academy Award. The score by Jerry Goldsmith has been praised as one of his best works. Since its release, Total Recall has been praised for its ambiguous ending, positing whether Quaid's adventures are real or a fantasy, and it has also been analysed for themes of authoritarianism and colonialism. Respective reviews have called it one of Schwarzenegger's best films and placed it among the best science fiction films ever made. Rotten Tomatoes named it one of the 300 essential films to watch, and it is also listed in the book 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die. And as ever, Total Recall can be found in both digital and physical formats, dependent on your location. Now, this one passed me by in the cinema. When it rolled around, I was over the whole 80s action hero movie thing. So when anything came to the cinema in that vein, being Arnie, Stallone, Van Damme, etc., I just wasn't interested. And, you know, past Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, thanks to Blade Runner, I wasn't familiar with Dick's work at the time. So as far as going to a theatre, that kind of came and went. However, I do recall picking it up from the local video store a few months after its release. It happened to take place a few days after I'd split up with my then girlfriend, so I sat around the house feeling sorry for myself and figured, you know, why not put the movie on to distract myself for an hour or two. And by the end, I'd completely forgotten about the breakup, Fickle Teens. I found it so impressive and so much fun that I was kicking myself for leaving it that long to watch it. So, yeah, how about you guys? What's your first memory of this one? And do you associate the movie with anything in particular?
Yeah, it passed me by in the cinema as well, but it would have been an immediate rental when it came out on video, so it would have been Blockbuster back in those days. Instantly loved it. Where it has a particular special meaning for me is there was a shared house I was in with a few other like-minded friends at university, and this is one of the dozen or so videos we owned between us, and it got a frequent rewatch, always something to put on when we had nothing better to do. Or if we just wanted to watch it, and it was frequently quoted, the number of times we said, get your ass to Mars, or open your mind to me, was just beyond counting. Yeah, so it's got a really special place for me, just from those sort of memories.
I saw this in theaters. I remember at the time, news outlets were always on the lookout for the next Batman. Which movie is going to be the next Batman? I remember seeing a news report where they said Total Recall is going to be the next Batman. And I was interested because I didn't know anything about the movie at the time, because that was the only time I ever heard about movies was on the news or seeing them in print. Saw it in theaters, instantly loved it. I thought, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen. It was just grim, gritty, action-packed, horrifically violent in places, unbelievably quotable. We were doing the whole, get your ass to Mars, as we left. And it's just a fantastic movie, and my love for it has only increased over the years as I have grown in sophistication and maturity. And it's one of my top 50 movies, probably even top 20 movies. I just think it's fantastic.
So I guess it's a fairly regular rewatch for you then.
Absolutely. This is one of the movies that I've talked about online on these podcasts that I have not had to rewatch, just because it's playing continuously in my head to the empty theater in my brain.
Cool. Well, I will take a look at the writing. Now, Ronald Shuster, he purchased the adaptation rights to Philip K. Dick's 23-page short story, We Can Remember It For You, wholesale for $1,000. Shuster had read the story by the then little-known writer in the April 66 edition of the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. Now, Dick's story depicts a meek clerk on Earth named Quail, who visits Recall Incorporated to receive a memory implant of being a secret agent on Mars. However, the process uncovers his true identity as a secret agent who previously visited Mars and whose death will bring about an alien invasion. Renaming it Total Recall, Shuster worked with Dan O'Bannon to write the script. O'Bannon exhausted the existing material quickly, and the short story's abrupt ending meant he could only write 30 pages, effectively only the first act of the movie. An original second and third act were needed. He suggested sending Quaid to Mars. Shuster and O'Bannon disagreed over the third act, the former wanting something more dramatic. O'Bannon's ending revealed the handprint on the alien machine as Quaid's, who is a replica of the original, and placing his hand on it grants him total memory recall. O'Bannon described the film ending as lame. Dick read the script prior to his death in 82 and, according to O'Bannon, enjoyed it. Although studios deemed Shuster and O'Bannon's script an ambitious and brilliant idea, it was essentially considered unfilmable, in part because of the extensive special effects and high budget that would be required, with the pair moving on to collaborate on the script for 1978's Alien, as Total Recall languished in development hell for over a decade. Apparently, both the adaptation of the screenplay and early drafts of the script had the main character's name as Douglas Quail. The original Philip K. Dick story had the name Quail as well. However, it was being made during the administration of President George Bush, in which Dan Quayle was vice president, and it's presumed that this was the reason for the change, as no one could see a character with that name as a heroic figure.
Wow. So,
potato.
Yeah. So with regards to the scripting, you know, from O'Bannon and Shuster and Goldman, giving credit where it's due, I mean, how do you think the script holds up?
Really well. it's taken a short story, you know, turned it into, you know, it's quite a high concept. It's quite some meaty themes in there. And it's turned it into real blockbuster entertainment for, I was going to say for all the family, but of course it is an R-rated film. But
what kind of family you come from.
Yeah, this is true. But yeah, without really, you know, dumbing it down too much, I think there's still some really clever stuff in here. There's lots of twists and turns, crosses and double crosses, and some political satire to a degree as well, sort of hallmark of Verhoeven's. I think it's really well written, and it's, you know, fast-paced. It moves from beginning to end. You learn things pretty much as Quaid does. Just great.
I think it's an incredibly sophisticated story from beginning to end that never really stops unraveling. And that's what I like about it, is that Total Recall keeps you entranced by the mystery and by each revelation. Even by the end, you're never quite sure what's happened. I believe it was Paul Verhoeven gave an interview a few years ago, and somebody asked him about the ending of Total Recall, and he said, oh yeah, it was always my thought that the light that you see whenever the sun flares and bathes the screen in white is Quaid being lobotomized by the recall machine. Oh. And I just remember I was so shocked. It's like, I'm sorry, what? No, that's not right. But, you know, whether or not that's the interpretation you take from it, if you think he is a hero of Mars, that's how the movie ends. If you think that he ends the story in the bed at Total Recall with a fried brain, that's the ending of the movie for you. Yeah. And that's what I love, is that here we are 35 years since this movie's been released. We're still debating and discussing it. And that is the hallmark of a great movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
I take it your personal view is that it did all happen.
I go back and forth. There are some things that very strongly hint that it is all a fantasy. The fact that Melina's face appears on the monitors before he meets her again. A few other things that appear in his fantasy that are talked about before he goes under the recall machine that hint that it is all a fantasy. But then there's the fun-loving part of me who just wants to say, nah, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger kicking ass on Mars. That's a great story right there, and that's what I want it to be.
Yeah, I'm very similar, actually, because I choose to believe that it happened. I'm just a simple guy, so I like a simple story. But I really do enjoy the ambiguous aspect of it. That was one thing that you've just mentioned about Melina appearing on the screen that always didn't quite sit right with that interpretation for me. But watching it again last night, I did sort of think, well, he's under the influence of the drugs they've pumped in. So perhaps he's just sort of imagining the screen and it's, you know, buried in his memories. But it's entirely open to either interpretation. And it is interesting to know that Verhoeven sort of subscribed to the lobotomy theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he explains it. Well, he does say on the commentary, when Edgemar, played by Roy Brocksmith, visits Quaid, he outlines the entire third act of the movie, says that if Quaid kills him, the walls of reality will come crashing down. I mean, moments after Quaid shoots him, the walls of the apartment literally crash down. He says that Quaid will believe himself the savior of the resistance, only to discover that he is, in fact, Cohagen's bosom buddy, which is, you know, pretty much exactly what happens. He also says that he'll have visions of an alien civilization, which Quaid experiences during the scene with Quato, and points out that if a viewer believes the whole film is a dream, then Edgemar's prediction that Quaid will end up being lobotomized is fulfilled in the fade to white, which ends the movie. The ending's also given away at two other points. When Bob McClane pitches the secret agent ego trip to Quaid, he tells him that by the time the trip is over, he'll get the girl, kill the bad guys, and save the planet. And when Dr. Lull tosses Ernie a computer chip just prior to the thing, he looks at it and says, that's a new one, Blue Sky on Mars. I'm like you guys. I kind of hop backwards and forwards. The Melina thing always kind of trip me up, but your explanation there, Nick, that's just slid right into my head canon, so I'm quite happy with that one. Yeah, I just take it that if it was a dream, you wouldn't necessarily get the scenes without Quaid in them. I do like the fact it for a typical, what considered typical 80s blockbuster, it is very kind of intellectual. It's not your typical Rambo kind of thing.
Most assuredly, I do enjoy that this is the thinking man's Schwarzenegger movie, that it's very philosophical and that you do have to use your head quite a bit.
It is a sign of its success, really, that you know it can be enjoyed on many levels. So you can literally go and see it, and it would have been a lot of people going to see it as just a pure sort of action romp. But you could also go and come out of it going, that was pretty smart, and give it some pondering and some beard stroking afterwards.
Yeah. It does hold up to repeated viewings as well, because I mean the first time you watch it, you are, as you said, in the same position as Quaid, finding out these things as he finds them out. You're constantly trying to figure out where it's going. Once you do know where it's going, when you've seen it the first time, you can go back and, you know, just enjoy it as an action film, or you can ponder the is it real or is it not kind of aspect. And I think it holds up incredibly well.
It certainly bears repeated viewings for that reason. Or near the beginning where Quaid will say something and somebody will give him an odd look out of his view, you sort of know what those are then. Whereas, you know, in the first time, you're like, why are they so confused by what he said?
Like when his workmate is just, they have that brief thing about recall, and then he just looks kind of really concerned as he's watching him. But he also kind of makes you feel a little paranoid while you're doing it. Because if it is, as they say, all a dream, then you're reading things in that aren't necessarily there, but have just been kind of dropped to create a red herring, as it were.
Yeah.
It's also got quite a lot of really quotable dialogue in this, as you mentioned earlier, Jason. Again, it's not your typical Schwarzenegger. Yes, he does have the odd thing to say after he dispatches someone, but it's
screw
not.
You.
Yeah, it's not. Consider that a divorce.
No, it's toned down slightly, but I'm assuming it was contractually required to have some one-liners for Arnie in there.
Yeah, I think that the audience would have been disappointed if he hadn't. My favorite is whenever he's holding Michael Ironside's arms, and he just talks to him on the side, "See you at the party, Victor!" I love the one-liners. Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger ever did a movie without one-liners, I would be disappointed. And I wouldn't care if it was the most sophisticated thinking man's philosophical movie ever made. I would be sad. I would just be absolutely sad.
You just reminded me of Last Action Hero.
Yeah, same here.
Not to be.
Yeah, so that brings us to the acting with regards to that. Now, weirdly enough, Christopher Reeve was offered this role, but turned it down. Also, Jeff Bridges, Matthew Broderick, Richard Dreyfuss, Mark Harmon, and Tom Selleck were also considered. Schwarzenegger took the part because he liked the idea of virtual travel. And the scene where the salesman sells him the trip he never took is one of Schwarzenegger's favorite scenes in the movie. Yeah, he apparently suffered several hand-related injuries as well during the shoot. When filming the scene where Quaid smashes the train window, the tiny explosive in the glass was supposed to shatter it a fraction of a second before Schwarzenegger struck it, but it didn't go off, and Schwarzenegger hit the glass for real, badly cutting himself. And then later, when filming the fight scene inside Quaid's Hilton suite, Schwarzenegger broke a finger on his right hand and had to get a cast fitted. So as a result, most of his scenes shot afterwards kept his injured hand off screen.
You suffer for your art.
Yeah.
I would hate to be that special effects person who was responsible for hurting Arnold Schwarzenegger, though. Yeah, Arnold comes back from the emergency room, kicks down the door. Well, is he?
I'm surprised he didn't take some groin injuries he gets.
Oh my gosh.
He takes two shots to the nuts in the first fight with Laurie.
Yeah, that would take me out of action permanently.
Yeah. I'm sure he was sufficiently cupped before that happened.
Yes.
That's going to be in my contract. You have to put that on there.
I can't really see anybody else in this role. Yes, they rewrote it to make him more of a blue-collar worker than a clerk, which I presume would have been the case had it been Christopher Reeve, but I honestly can't see someone like Reeve in this role. I think Schwarzenegger plays this brilliantly, and I do think it's one of his better ones.
You know, quite honestly, whenever you were listing all the actors who were considered for the role of Douglas Quaid, Christopher Reeves was the only one that I could picture taking the role. Now, do not get me wrong. Arnold Schwarzenegger is the perfect person for this role, but maybe it's Christopher Reeve and his turn as Superman, but I kind of see Douglas Quaid as
sort of a Superman, where at first he's Clark Kent, and then as soon as his programming, I guess, is reawakened, he becomes a Superman.
I do think this is kind of the movie where we see the gradual evolvement of Schwarzenegger roles from just your typical action movie star to someone that kind of has something to say, you know, obviously leading on to things like Last Action Hero. He wants to kind of explore his roles a little. I would always prefer to see a Schwarzenegger movie over a Stallone or a Van Damme
Absolutely. He was my action man. I wasn't interested in Stallone. Van Damme more so, but no, it was Arnie all the way for me.
The only other action star that I would hold to the same caliber as Arnold Schwarzenegger would be Jackie Chan. Just people who were physically fit, fun to watch, and had a charisma that you couldn't help but love. Arnold and Jackie. Did Arnold and Jackie ever do a movie together?
Yeah, they have, yeah. They did one a couple of years ago called Iron Mask. They were advertised as starring in it, but from what I can gather, it's like a kind of Russian co-production, and it stars Jason Fleming, and they're in it for about 5 to 10 minutes. They do share a scene, yes. There was also that little scene in Around the World in 80 Days, the remake.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I loved Arnold Schwarzenegger in that movie. I thought he was hilarious.
So, yeah, with regards to the rest of the cast, after seeing Sharon Stone's performance as Laurie in this movie, Paul Verhoeven would then cast her in Basic Instinct due to her ability to play a character that could change from a timid, charming sweetheart to a diabolical person and back again at a moment's notice. But, apparently Nicole Kidman and Alexandra Paul were both considered for the role of Melina before it went to Rachel Ticotin. So what do you think to the leading ladies? I think they're both really good. They're kind of more like in the vein of a Bond girl, but the main Bond girl that's out there and kicking ass.
I think they both do very well. They're both kick-ass, strong female sort of co-leads, I guess. But they're both very strong in the roles. I'd probably take Melina over Laurie, just because, you know, she's the good one.
It's just because she's sleazy. You know it.
Athletic, sleazy, and demure.
And demure, yes.
I think that Rachel Ticotin is extremely underrated in this movie. I think that whenever you are put up against someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sharon Stone, and you shine anyway, I think that's a tremendous accomplishment. I also think that it's great that in a movie that existed in a time of, let's face it, disposable female characters, the fact that Total Recall made its two female leads so dramatically different with personalities of their own and motivations of their own, I think that that's another strength of this film, in that it treated female cast members like people instead of just sex objects. Both parts were fantastic, I thought. But I do think Rachel Ticotin does need more praise than what she gets.
Definitely. I do like that the film gives them some agency. They know what's happening a lot more than, you know, Doug Quaid does for a lot of the time. And he's kind of caught up in events, whereas they're both on opposite sides, but they know exactly what's going on.
Yes, I like that the women have the power in this movie. Even the three-breasted woman in the bar.
Yeah.
Who is like one of the most memorable, made-fun-of characters ever. She's never out of control. She is always the one who is trying to steer things her direction. She doesn't throw herself at people. She's just kind of like, hey, look what I got. Yes, you can have this if you do what I want.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I find that oddly progressive. And the fact that it's Sonia Gomez from Star Trek The Next Generation is just, it's like the fact that that's the same actress, I'm just like, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, her character Mary was originally supposed to have four breasts, but the producers thought it looked too much like a cow's udder. By the time things had gone through, Lissia Naff, who plays, says that her smile on screen was only on the surface, and she was near tears during the shoot. She says, "I sort of freaked out and started regretting that I took the part, but Paul Verhoeven went out of his way to make me feel comfortable. He promised me a better role in his next film, but it never happened. In the end, she found the whole thing so degrading that she refused to do any publicity for the movie.
Oh, that is a shame. I hate that part made her feel that way. I really do.
Yeah.
I wonder now how she looks back, if she's kind of proud of it or if she's still a little ashamed of it.
I hope that she's gotten more comfortable with it. And if not, it's certainly her right to feel that way.
Yeah. Speaking of connections to Star Trek, Johnny Cab.
Yes.
Robert Picardo. Yeah. I didn't know this, but apparently when he was whistling the Norwegian national anthem.
That's a deep cut trivia.
There's two other Star Trek connections in this movie. Ronnie Cox, who went on to play Captain Jellicoe. Mark Alamo, who went on to play Gul Dukat. So there's Star Trek all through this thing.
Yeah, I completely forgot about the character of Everett in this. So when I saw him, I did the Leonardo DiCaprio meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So it was nice to see Gul Dukat in this. Both Robert Davi and Kurtwood Smith turned down the role of Richter. Smith felt the role was too similar to his character Boddicker in RoboCop. What do we think to Michael Ironside?
He gives great top goon. He plays it really well as well, because he goes through a bit of a roller coaster of emotions on the whole thing. And I like that he's another character. He knows more than Quaid, but he obviously doesn't know everything because he's not in on the Anka Hagen's big picture. So he almost fucks it up.
Yeah.
I like Michael Ironside in anything he does. I've always enjoyed him. I'm one of the few people who actually think Sequest got better whenever he became the captain. But in this movie in particular, he's got this menace. And I actually think it was brilliant having him be Sharon Stone's actual love interest, because whenever she's off in the movie, it becomes personal for him.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that it becomes personal for him. It's gone from being business to just hatred at that point.
He's got like an almost innocence when it comes to, obviously, Laurie. I love the little scene where she contacts him on the phone and he trails his fingers on the screen and he's got such this like childlike grin, and then he turns and he's all business again. To me, he's one of those actors that can chew the scenery, but he's so good at chewing scenery that you just kind of accept it and move on.
Yeah.
Ian Holm apparently was considered for the role of Cole Hagen before it was given to Ronnie Cox. And
that would have been interesting.
Yeah. And apparently Ronnie Cox obviously got the role because he was so impressed with Verhoeven in RoboCop.
Yeah, he's deliciously evil without being at all over the top.
Even though it's listed as a Schwarzenegger vehicle, it feels more like an ensemble piece, because Schwarzenegger never really, in my mind anyway, steals the show from anybody else. There's a lot of meaty parts for other people, and I wondered what you guys thought to that.
I did discover that it was this absolutely fantastic ensemble with many, many talented actors who either were doing great things or went on to do great things. Sharon Stone, Michael Ironside, Dean Norris, so many great actors in this movie. Sometimes I just sat back in awe looking at the people who were in the background or just to the side of some of these scenes, thinking, oh, wow. Roy Brocksmith. Roy Brocksmith is awesome.
He was a very underrated actor. Usually did a lot of comedic roles, if I remember. Just a guy in the background being weird.
He had such a distinctive voice that he was one of those actors that you knew, but you didn't know their name.
Yeah.
And I love those kind of actors. I miss the guy. I know he's been gone well over 20 years now, but I miss seeing him in things.
Yeah. Yeah. With regards to the acting, is there anything that we might have missed that any of you guys want to bring up? Anybody that you think deserves some special recognition?
I think, was it Mel Johnson Jr. as Benny? I think he does well as well. See, I've got 5 kids to feed.
That was the twist in the story that surprised me more than anything, was Benny, because honestly, I loved Benny at that point. And then whenever he shoots Quato, I was just like, no! How could you, Benny? You were my boy!
Yeah.
Yeah.
because you'd already had the twist that he was a mutant. So you thought, another member of the gang here. And then he does that and you feel as betrayed as Doug.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of that whole trope of having the comedic relief with the heroic couple, and they turn it on its ear at that point. So it's another thing that I think that makes this movie memorable in many ways, is the fact that it does take the stereotypes of action movies and throws them out the window gleefully, like laughing maniacally the entire time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we'll get to, speaking of laughing gleefully and being maniacal, we'll get on to Paul Verhoeven now. The original cut of the movie, it was threatened with an X rating for excessive violence, some of which was trimmed, different camera angles was used on some of the more over-the-top scenes for it to secure the desired R rating. But still, it's pretty bloodthirsty in places. I'm thinking specifically of that poor commuter on the escalator.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
At least he was useful at the end.
I also love the scene where they're trying to erase his memory. He pulls the restraint from the chair when, with the bolt, hits the presiding doctor in the neck. I've always thought that's particularly gruesome, but incredibly well done.
Yeah. There is lots of great gore in this movie. The weirdest one to me is when Arnold Schwarzenegger, his friend from the construction yard, ambushes him. I just remember he hits one of them, and blood just erupts straight up from this guy's nose. And I guess it came from the fist that hits him in the face. But it's just such a strong visual. And it's one of the first deaths that you see in the movie. And I just remember just being completely taken by it. Like, oh, good Lord. And the guy has this look of shock on his face, too. Just like, oh, my God, did that just happen? As he's dying.
What I do like about it is it's not unique, and certainly not in Verhoeven's catalogue of films, that they weren't afraid to make R-rated blockbuster entertainment, which maybe you don't see so much these days. It has to be toned down and sanitized for as big an audience as possible. But back in the 80s and 90s, you could get sort of these really violent films that were intended to be blockbuster entertainment.
I think what shocked me the most when I watched this is, up until then, when I had seen violence in a Schwarzenegger film, to me it was mostly kind of the old ultra-violence. It wasn't very realistic as such, and I think the realism in this, it was a shock to me.
I think the matter-of-fact violence of it was kind of a shock to me. It was just, when somebody gets hit, they can die. You know, before that it was, you know, if you get hit, you'll get knocked out for a little bit and then you'll get up. It was violence, and the violence had consequences, I think, was the most shocking bit to me, because it brought this grittiness and realism to a movie that was decidedly unrealistic. Yeah. And I find that very appealing.
Yeah.
Apparently, Schwarzenegger hired Verhoeven as the director after being impressed with RoboCop, for which he'd been considered for the lead role. I think that's definitely what they were going for, and they got that in spades. I mean, it's not quite, you know, turning someone's hand into a milkshake, but it's pretty close. Apparently, Verhoeven, he fell ill with food poisoning during shooting and was rarely completely fit during production. The production company's insurance, though, did not cover the first 3 days of hospitalization. So every day he called in sick would have deducted $150,000 from the movie's budget. Towards the end of filming, he got so sick, he would have an ambulance nearby on set at all times. I mean, that must have cost something. And the paramedics could administer fluids and medication in between takes so he could keep directing in spite of his illness. He would direct from a stretcher on top of a minivan because he was unable to stand. And he informed the crew that unless a doctor actually said he was dying, they were going to continue shooting.
You got to admire that type of commitment.
Yeah. Apparently, several crew members fell ill, with the exception of Schwarzenegger and Schuster. Schwarzenegger escaped because he'd always had his food catered from the USA since he fell foul of this kind of problem when he was shooting Predator. As for Schuster, he insisted on getting a weekly vitamin B12 shot. He was mocked by the crew until they all got sick themselves. According to Verhoeven, the famous "Get your ass to Mars." Go on, Jason.
Get your ass to Mars.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Apparently that line was an afterthought to bridge the film's change of setting from Earth to Mars. Originally, Verhoeven wanted to film a separate scene showing Quaid boarding the shuttle bound for Mars, but couldn't do so due to budget constraints. So as a compromise, Verhoeven came up with the idea of having the laptop device repeat the part of Hauser's message in a loop as the film transitions. Honestly, I mean, I love Verhoeven. I like Basic Instinct. I love RoboCop. And I think this is one of his best. I think there's some really good stuff in this.
I see it as sort of a thematic trilogy with RoboCop and Starship Troopers, which are probably my three favourites of his. Big entertainment, massive spectacle, a lot of violence, but with something really to say behind them, you know, behind the substance of the actual plot itself. I miss that kind of film.
I completely agree. I wish that there was more thinking man's science fiction. Honestly, the only time I looked at this movie and thought that it was stupid was whenever Quaid makes his hideout right outside where the burning taxi cab that he left outside was. I just thought that was probably not the smartest move, especially since it's the burning taxi cab that lures the bad guys right to him.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I should have ran a couple of blocks first.
There is one other thing that bugs me about the film, actually, only a little bit, but and it's for plot reasons. You'd think they'd make the domes on Mars with bulletproof glass. It just seems too risky not to do so.
Well, they do kind of hint that they make them as cheap as possible. So
yeah, you know, that's fair. Yeah,
let's make them out of plexiglass and hope no one has a gun.
Yeah, or leans on it too hard.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I like about Verhoeven movies when it comes to sci-fi is there's an incredible amount of world building. They do seem to take care to make it seem real and lived in. You look at this, and to quote Starship Troopers, I'd like to know more. More than anything, I would like to know more about the world that Quaid's living in on this. I think I'd love to have seen more kind of adventures in this world.
Yeah. Well, there's another Total Recall movie we could always look at.
Let's not.
I watched it and I just thought, the hell is this? Who thought this was a good idea? It was name recognition. It was just basically, how many people can we trick into seeing this movie?
Yeah, I don't have I don't have memories of it, really. I have seen it.
I thought that the elevator through the earth was kind of cool. But that was it.
So yeah, back to the good version. It was one of the last major Hollywood blockbusters to make large scale use of miniature effects as opposed to CGI, especially for, you know, the city and that kind of thing. Weirdly enough, though, it was also one of the first major Hollywood blockbusters to use CGI, mainly for the scenes involving the X-ray scanner and have it look photorealistic. Getting on to the production design. Does anything stand out for you?
The model work is great. You can kind of, especially watching it on a small screen, you can kind of tell they are models, but they're really good. And the sense of scale is really impressive. The zoom out from the train on Mars out to sort of the facility and the landscape is really well done. And it's a very brief shot as well. The spaceship sort of landing is very good. But yeah, the special effects are very good, and not just the model work, the sort of makeup stuff as well. It's a little bit rubbery in places, but the eye bulging, popping stuff, that's really quite disturbing as well, the way they've done that.
Yeah, I do like this, and I think, as you said, the eyeball popping scene and the faulty disguise earlier in the movie, I still think looks amazing, even now. It was mind-blowing at the time, but as you said, Jason, it's 35 years old, and you look at it now, and it still looks good.
It does. It's so funny. I have the movie going on mute right now, and I'm at the scene where the faulty disguise starts malfunctioning, and as I'm watching it right now, the head is about to open. It's one of the special effects that looks great the first time you see it, but then if you look at it any closer, it doesn't, because Arnold Schwarzenegger's head is not real. It's this plasticky looking head. But I kind of think that's part of the fun of these movies, is that not all of the special effects look perfect. Yeah. I think that the imperfect special effects bring a character to a film like this. not everything looks real. And I think that that's something that Hollywood has kind of forgotten lately, is that it does not have to be realistic. And I think that lends more to the fantasy of a piece like this. It helps us buy into it. It helps that suspension of disbelief that, yeah, we're watching something that we know is not real. It's okay if something looks a little bit fake. But the special effects in Total Recall, I think that they hit that balance where you know they're special effects, you know that they are miniatures, but it doesn't matter. They look good and they lend themselves to the story.
With regards to the scene that you were talking about, Nick, the train one, the studio wanted that cut. It was down to budget, and they just didn't want it. According to Verhoeven, Schwarzenegger had to step in and convince the studio to give the production enough money to complete that one shot. So
that's a great shot, and that sense of scale and place that it gives you. Yeah, and he has just arrived on Mars, so it shows you sort of the different environment and where he is.
Yeah. Going back to the earlier thing of whether it's real or not, when Quaid's being shown the monitor, it does show some of the concept drawings of the reactors on Mars. Also shows an illustration of a green Martian from the Edgar Rice Burroughs novels. Oh. Some of the large ads seen after Quaid gets off the subway are real signs featured above the insurgent subway station in Mexico City, most notably the Fujifilm and Coca-Cola signs, and the Coke sign is still there today. Speaking of which, Coca-Cola, it's the only advertised soft drink on Earth. On Mars, we see ads only for Pepsi.
Maybe it's like the restaurants where, you know, you can only have Pepsi at some restaurants, but Cokes at other restaurants. Maybe planets are like that in the future.
Yeah.
Pepsi has the bars franchise.
I think if I had one problem with this, and it's not necessarily the movie's fault, but it kind of ushered in a certain look for sci-fi during this era. And then that look was kind of done to death. And I think the prevalent use of this kind of look, and I'm thinking of specifically Mars and, say, Cohagen's office, it was so ubiquitous in the 90s in TV shows and that kind of thing, that it, nowadays, when I look back at it, it kind of feels a little cheap, not through any fault of the filmmaker or anything like that, but just the amount of times I've seen that kind of look since. I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
I do think it's kind of weird that all the walls in Mars are made out of corrugated metal.
Yeah.
Just growing up in Texas, I recognized the corrugated metal immediately because that's what is pretty much all the barns and roofs are made out of. So I just thought, they went to Ace Hardware and got some corrugated metal and thought, hey, this looks futuristic. And I'm just like, that's what we got out there on the barn.
Yeah. Does any of this feel kind of cheap to you then with regards to, like, you know, the sets, or does anything these days not hold up?
Well, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier about, I don't think everything has to look perfect. I don't think that everything has to look futuristic. I kind of like, I recognize some of the things that they make their sets out of, because to me, it is that suspension of disbelief. We're watching theater. You have to use what's here on Earth to make your sets. And yeah. I just find it kind of fun. I find it all part of the fantasy.
What about you, Nick, with regards to the production design on this one?
Yeah, I kind of see where you're coming from with the ubiquity of certain things. There's great use of the locations, the sort of brutalist architecture used to portray the future. Lots of angles and concrete and stairs going up and down. I do think as well, that struck me this time, and probably never any previous time, the vehicle design gave me real Cybertruck vibes.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, no.
I remember watching this. It wasn't the first time I watched it, but I remember watching it in, I'd say, the early 2000s. And I remember going, well, it all looks good, but those cars are just so unrealistic. People are going for, like, smoother cars. And then watching it this time, I just, oh, okay, I stand corrected. We are really doing this now.
It just kind of makes me think that Elon Musk's idea of a futuristic-looking vehicle is the same as people in the 80s.
Well, I don't think that these are Elon Musk cars because they're working and they're not rusty.
One of them does explode.
Well, that is true, but I think it gets shot first. It doesn't explode by somebody closing the trunk too hard.
It's not spontaneous, yeah.
No.
So, yeah, we'll get on to sound design now. And the Jerry Goldsmith score, I think it it is definitely one of his best.
This score is, I think, brilliant because the theme of the movie works as both the background music for an action scene or a romantic undertone. It just depends on how fast you play it.
Yeah.
And I think Jerry Goldsmith was such a fantastic composer. And this is, I believe, his best.
The mood changes in this score are just phenomenal. At one point, you know, you've got your action stuff, but then it just changes to this completely ethereal vibe for when he's having that little moment with Quato. I used to have the CD for this, and I used to listen to that track at night because it was just so relaxing. Yeah, apparently, he received some criticism about the score. Some people were saying it had no theme.
Oh, bull.
Yeah. He says the movie did in fact have a theme, but it wasn't the kind of theme that people left the movie theaters whistling. He modeled some of the score after Schwarzenegger's Conan the Barbarian score by Basil Poldouris.
I could see that, yeah.
I don't honestly see how you could look at this and say it doesn't have a theme, because it's straight there as soon as the opening credits begin, and it's throughout the entire movie. I don't see where that criticism comes from.
Enduring greatness is rarely recognized when it happens. And I think that this is one of those instances where, in many ways, the lasting greatness of Total Recall was not recognized and wasn't appreciated when it first came on the scene. And here it is, 35 years later, it's still holding up, and we recognize it for what it is. And for the record, I was humming the theme whenever I left the theater. I was doing it out of spite.
In a 2012 retrospective, Vulture wrote that despite its anachronistic aspects, such as outdated technology, Total Recall remained relevant, particularly in its themes of the oppressed fighting back against their oppressors, which was compared to the 2011 Occupy Wall Street movement. A 2020 inverse retrospective argued that Total Recall, not Blade Runner, was the best adaptation of Dick's work, despite its deviations from the source material. And discussing the film in 2016, the AV Club described it as one of the best 1980s style action films. Other publications have called it one of Schwarzenegger's most entertaining films and one of his best roles. There were plans for a sequel, which eventually became Minority Report. Obviously, that was also based on a Philip K. Dick story. And also
has the possibility at a certain point that it's not real anymore when he gets haloed, was it, or something?
Something like that.
You could argue that everything in the film after that in Minority Report was just his dreams, what was being fed to him, because it was all happy ending.
Well, I mean, in the original script for Minority Report, it would have had Quaid as the head of the organization that uses the mutants with precog abilities to predict and stop crimes before they happen. Carolco struggled to secure funding, and Schwarzenegger's interest waned in the project before the company went bankrupt, so that's why it went elsewhere. Meanwhile, the television rights were bought by DFL Entertainment for $1.2 million to develop a TV series, which turned out to be Total Recall 2070. The show, set entirely on Earth, was not based on the film and was described by author David Hughes as closer to Blade Runner. In the interim, Schuster and collaborator Goldman had removed the Total Recall elements from their script and developed Minority Report as a standalone film. The film rights to Total Recall were then bought by Dimension Films at Carolco's bankruptcy auction. The studio began development of a sequel, intending to bring back the principal cast, but not Verhoeven. Schuster's original contract guaranteed him first draft rights to a sequel, and he, based on an earlier agreement, was obliged to work with Goldman. The pair story continued from the end of Total Recall, with Mars now an independent planet. The Rebels explore Quaid's mind for Hauser's memories of a mind control project, featuring several twists, including Quaid waking up at Recall on Earth and other hints that he is living within a dream. Schwarzenegger became actively involved in 98, but believed their idea was overly complicated. There was another draft revealing that Hauser and Quaid are both fabricated personalities and depicting the destruction of Mars to save Earth from a bomb placed in the sun. Yeah, I have no idea. this uh, This draft was well received by Dimension, but they did ask them to rewrite it to lower the budget. Development eventually ceased as a series of failed films harmed Dimension financially, and the studio was unable to reach an agreement with Schwarzenegger. The rights to Total Recall were eventually purchased by Columbia Pictures, and a remake appeared in 2012. The film, also called Total Recall, starred Colin Farrell, Bryan Cranston, Kate Beckinsale, and Jessica Biel. It's garbage, honestly.
Agreed.
Yeah.
The film failed to replicate the financial or critical success of the original. So yeah, is that something that you guys would have wanted to see more of? Are you grateful that it ended up as a standalone?
A little of column A, a little of column B. If there had been a sequel to Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger in it, I would have seen it. Happily would have seen it opening weekend. But on the other hand, I'm kind of glad that it's left as a standalone adventure, because it is not watered down by what comes after. It's not harmed by what comes after. Now, for all we know, the sequel could have been just as good. It could have been something spectacular and memorable, or it could have been a gigantic pile of shit. Who knows? I'm just kind of glad we have what we have, and there never was a remake.
Yeah. 100% agree with everything you just said there. I think also, you know, if there had been a sequel, it might have definitively answered the question of whether he was lobotomized or if it was real. And that ambiguity would have been lost, and I think that's part of its greatness.
Yeah, so before we move on, is there anything either you wanted to bring up that we haven't had the opportunity to discuss? Anything we might have missed?
The bug removal through the nose is just an extraordinary scene. Absolutely love that. It's horrible. It's uncomfortable. And did they really need to use quite that larger bug? I don't know, but it's fun that they did.
I enjoy this movie on another level, and that's because it brought us that absolutely wonderful Arnold Schwarzenegger sound effect, the I love that so much. I swear, if I ever meet Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm just going to, oh my gosh, it's so wonderful to meet you. I won't be able to help myself. It'll be like a weird mating call or something. I think he'd have to answer back. There's actually a comedian who, he tells a story about meeting Arnold Schwarzenegger while Arnold Schwarzenegger's at a fuel pump. And he gets on the phone. He's like, dude, you will not believe who's next to me. Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he said he said that into the phone, and he heard Arnold Schwarzenegger at the food pump go. So apparently Arnold Schwarzenegger is contractually required to answer that call whenever he hears it. So I'm hoping one day I'll come across him in the wild just to test it. So either he'll answer me or I'll get punched in the face. Either way, it'll be legendary. What happened to your teeth? I got punched by Arnold Schwarzenegger, man. It was awesome.
So what is it about, you know, at the end of the day, what is it about this movie that brings you back for more? I mean, like I said, to me, it feels like a fully fleshed out world. The technological advancements, the mutant culture, state of society. I just love it. I'd love to explore more in this world. And that's what keeps me coming back. But you know, what is it for you guys? What keeps you coming back for this one?
The world, despite the fact that I can tell there's corrugated cardboard and green screens, it feels real. The fact that in Venusville there's a sign for Jack in the Box and there's trash rolling around on the ground, and that it's a world that feels like it's lived in, and it's a world that feels fully fleshed out. And quite honestly, I wouldn't even mind visiting Mars, even though apparently it's kind of a seedy location. It just looks like a world that would be fun just to explore and get involved in. And I think that's probably the film's greatest appeal right there, is just how great the world building is.
Yeah.
Yeah, agree with all points. But yeah, there's just nothing about this film that doesn't work for me, really. Yeah, that is, and anything that's not quite there, it doesn't matter. Yeah, as you say, it's part of the charm. From beginning to end, there's nothing that's not entertaining about this film.
Well, yeah, as always, we went over to you guys to see what you thought about this one in our socials. Normally, we would go over to the good lady Vianne for this, but she's a little indisposed this month. So we're going to hear from our friend Jen, who's kindly taken on the feedback duties for this month. So, yeah, we'll head over to you. Jen, what does everyone have to say on this one?
Thanks, DK. We'll start with Nancy. Having worked on this film as special photographer on location in Mexico City, I can say with glee that the experience of being even slightly involved in this production was a blast. Verhoeven, of course, was brilliant and had fun being so. Arnie, not that I called him that, was brilliant and had fun being so. I photographed Sharon Stone for the first time and had fun doing so. Paul and Arnold teased me by doing outrageous stuff while I was changing film, none of which I could shoot, and had fun doing so. You must get what I'm suggesting. I loved it all, including the film, and LOL. David Jurowski. Great movie. My parents, knowing I'm a huge science fiction fan, for Christmas 1 year, gave me a collection of short stories that have been adapted into film, and it came included with Philip K. Dick, so we can remember it for you, wholesale, the story that Total Recall is based on. If you are a fan of the movie, I would suggest reading the short story. David Allen Kay, brilliant, unlike the awful remake. Aaron Balilla, a beautiful exhibition of special effects complemented by solid, fast-paced plot and an all-star cast. Arnie, Sharon Stone, and Ronnie Crox, one of the most violent, bloody sci-fi films committed to screen by the director of RoboCop, so no surprise the blood splatter was a fly-in. Rick Kelling, I'll give it a generous 3. Al Winter, I like it, not as much as RoboCop or Starship Troopers, but it's a fun film. Defo better than the remake. Feels kind of enclosed and sweaty, but I suppose that was the point. Ironside is a little wasted and Arnie's one-liners mostly fall flat. 7 out of 10 for me. Sean Angel Erdelman. I like how ambiguous the ending is. It's up to the viewer if he went to Mars or if it was just simulation. Ernesto Ochoa. I remember it was a fun movie. Paul Whittleton. Watched at cinema on its opening night in the UK. They don't make them like this anymore. Adrian Conlon. For me, the very least 4.5 star masterpiece. Stephen Forrester. If Predator didn't exist, it would be Arnold's best movie. But it's not Verhoeven's. Flesh and Blood or RoboCop best. The practical effects terrified me as a child, especially Cuato and the arm gag with Richter. Sharon Stone was absolute fire as well. Ray Gibson. Every Arnold movie was a must-see back then, and Total Recall delivered all the goods, including one of his most iconic lines. Consider that a divorce. As for me, Total Recall is something that I watched again and again when it came on TV. It is a staple of its period, and should still be seen as a good movie that people should be seeing now.
Awesome. Thanks, Jen. Very glad to have you on board for this month. And thank you to you out there also who let us know your thoughts on this. If you did miss out, though, don't worry. You can always hit us up on our socials. Link, as always, will be in the description to let us know your thoughts. Or do it in the comments on this show. We always like to see what you have to say. So, yeah, now it's time for our roundup, in which we each give our final thoughts and score out of 5. And once that's done, we'll tally them and see what our cult classic score for today's movie is. So, yeah, I'm going to come to you first on this one, Jason.
This is one of the best science fiction movies ever made. It is arguably the best Arnold Schwarzenegger movie ever made. And my score for it is a perfect 5 out of 5. I don't think it can be topped.
Nice. Nick?
I don't think I can add anything that Jason hasn't said. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm also going to give it a 5 for those same reasons. It is my favorite Arnie movie. It's got a really special place for me. It brings back fond memories of a time. Great adult blockbuster entertainment with smarts and social commentary.
Nice. Yeah, it's colourful, it's fun, it's frenetic. From the moment you reach the recall officers, this thing never lets up for a minute. It doesn't go overboard with dull, repetitive action. It keeps you guessing just where it's headed. And for an action movie at the tail end of the 80s, it was desperately needed. A Philip K. Dick adaptation that easily, to my mind, ranks alongside Blade Runner, although taking a different tack, and it works wonderfully. Schwarzenegger is at the top of his game, giving a slightly more muted performance while still delivering some great action sequences. Many consider this one of his best, and for good reason. There's some great performances again from Rachel Ticote, Sharon Stone, Ronnie Cox, and Michael Ironside, giving his best scenery chewing. It's almost an ensemble feel rather than a straight Arnie vehicle. The world building is second to none. You don't know the specifics of the solar system they inhabit, but giving you just enough for you to want to know more. The special effects headed up by Rob Bottin still look spectacular to me. It showed us things in this movie we'd never seen before and to some extent haven't seen since. The Goldsmith score is sublime. It's instantly recognizable with motifs that range from heart-pounding action sequences to those ethereal wonders. It's a sci-fi fan buffet where everything on offer is just delicious. I do have minor complaints, but, you know, I've mentioned them with regards to the look of it, but honestly, that's not the movie's fault, and it's what came after. This is still a cracking piece of action cinema that also, one could argue, gives your brain a workout as opposed to just your blood pressure. It's great stuff, and I'm also going to give it a 5 out of 5. Yeah, I think that makes it slightly easier to work out the average for this one. It's only our second year on Cult Classics perfect score of 5 out of 5. So not a bad one, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I think it's well-deserved.
Absolutely.
Nice. I do think generally Arnie movies kind of hold up well. So, I mean, I'm glad we finally got one on Cult Classics officially. And it's definitely a good one to start with, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And yeah, I guess we kind of stretched the definition of what a cult film is, but I'm fine with that.
We've been doing that for a while, mate. If we can list Ghostbusters as a cult film, I think we can slide Total Recall in there.
Absolutely.
That's it from us this time around. As usual, allow me to express my appreciation to you, dear listener, for joining us on this one. And if you like what you heard, do not forget to like and subscribe. We do have some more great cult movies coming up over the coming months. And if you're so inclined, you can check out our guest's last appearance, should you find yourself liking the cut of their jib on this one. I'll post the links to those respective episodes below. Speaking of guests, Jason, thank you for joining us once more on this one. How was it for you this time around?
I enjoy myself every time I'm here, so thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime, man. Where can the listeners find you? You got any social media you'd like to share? Do you have anything special coming up you'd like them to know about?
Well, you can find me across social media. All you have to do is search my username, Jason Roy Gaston. In particular, on YouTube, myself and my friend VHS Jace, we run a podcast called The VHS Vault that I'm very proud of. Right now, we are currently doing a retrospective of the Superman films in preparation for the release of James Gunn's Superman movie. All kinds of fun stuff always happening over there. So if you'd like to go over there and check me out, I would very much appreciate it.
Cool. Well, we'll try and get some links in the description. So yeah, you out there, please do click on those links and give Jason a follow. Also, I want to give a big thank you to Nick. I trust you'll polish this turd before it goes out. Have you had a good time today, fella?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always happy to talk about any Arnie film. Particularly this one. So yeah, great times, and I've learned some things as well.
Well, I'll not ask where the listeners can find you, as I assume that, you know, like me, you're still a misanthropic bastard.
Absolutely. I would be very upset if anybody could find me.
Brilliant. So yeah, thanks to you out there once more for coming with us to Mars for this one. If you'd like to know more about the show and where we can be found, the links will be coming up on screen shortly. And as I said, please like and subscribe. We'll be back next time with another cult movie. And if you're wondering what it could be, well, you'll just have to join us. First Tuesday of next month, as myself and a couple of guests head over to a mysterious island to find out just what's going on. But don't worry, it's not Mysterious Island. Until then, take care of yourself, watch your back, and just think, what if this is all just a dream?
You have been listening to the Cult Classics Show, part of the Silver Screen Podcast. Created, written, and hosted by DK. Editing by Nick. Produced by Mike Wilson. Feedback section produced by Lady Vien. Opening credits by Ian Sanderson. Music by Timeless Journey. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found on our link tree. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. This has been a Mad Badger production for the Media Matters Podcast Network. Copyright 2024. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you next time. And remember, no matter where you go, there you are.
See you at the party, Victor!